Tonight's shiur is being sponsored by the Nachman family, Tzvi and Naomi Nachman. We thank them for their generous sponsorship and dedication. And now we will get into our topic. For anyone who's been following the news out of Israel the last couple of days, and I guess the last couple of weeks, let's just say that this week and the last few days in this week have been exceptionally discouraging. And I guess I would say that it's demoralizing to watch what's been going on. I think tragic situations like this, I'll explain in a minute, are times that afford our community the opportunity to talk about something which should be so obvious and indisputable to all of us, and yet there seems to be so much confusion that is out there if you're reading the articles and you're watching the posts and the comments that people are making. So this is a very big topic, and it is something that I think will take us more than just this week to cover in its entirety. Tonight's shiur will be about the general question that many, many, many people have been asking. I am being flooded with emails and texts from people in our shul. As we know, halacha has a position about everything in our lives. Every situation that comes up, every scenario can be found with an answer in halacha. You just have to know where to look to find that answer. So the question that is being raised is, what does the halacha say about the possibility of filing a criminal complaint against an individual who is alleged to have been involved in inappropriate sexual activity? This shiur should really end because it's pretty obvious what the answer is, but it seems that it's not obvious and it needs to be spoken about again, just to remind ourselves. So the question, first of all, is that simply an act of lashon hara? Question number two that people are asking is that something that involves the prohibition of mesira? You're not allowed to give somebody over to the secular authorities. Question number three, how can we accept the account of certain witnesses who are more often than not part of the category of halachically acceptable witnesses? As we know, when a couple gets married, they need to have two kosher edim standing onto the chuppah and witnessing the kiddushin. So we know that there are very careful criteria for that. Very often, the victims that are involved, or the alleged victims, are really not people that would otherwise be acceptable as edim in the halachic process. So how do we move forward? What do you say? That everything that they're going to tell us is invalid? That's impossible. But on the other hand, how could we accept it? Number four, should a public figure be removed from his or her position just based on an allegation alone before it is tried in a beis din or in a court or by the police, whatever it may be? Should that be enough grounds for us, just an allegation alone, to remove that person from their position? Number five, if an allegation is substantiated or an allegation is corroborated, should the books or the svarim of that individual continue to be learned or studied from? Or would you say that this invalidates everything they've done up until this point, and we would have to rid ourselves of all of their influence? These are very important questions that have been on the minds of many over the last few weeks, and it's certainly something that we need to think about, leaving no room for any ambiguity at all, because we don't want anyone to come to the mistaken conclusions about this very important topic. First of all, one needs to understand that these issues are so sensitive and so deeply unsettling, because we're dealing with a situation of real pikuach nefesh on both sides of the equation. So however we choose to handle it, you are potentially endangering someone's life in a very, very practical and serious way. If the alleged victim is not given the proper encouragement and the proper protection and support that they need to move ahead with whatever it is that they need to do, their lives can and probably will be destroyed forever. And often in the worst case scenario, their lives will end by death to suicide. So often we see, the research shows that that is what happened. On the other hand, because we understand that each person does have a legal and halachic right to defend themselves, the Torah says, Shamoa ben Achechem, that you have to present a claim in the presence of the other individual, and the defendant has to have the opportunity to defend themselves. So we want to make sure that everything we do is being done in a way that keeps our community safe, that minimizes harm to all parties involved, and that going above and beyond with just campaigns of slander or harassment or cancellation against one individual are something that we're not really trying to do. We're trying to get to the truth. We're trying to protect everybody involved and protect anyone in the future from being hurt. So these are issues that need to be dealt with not on Twitter and not on Facebook and not on social media, but in a very, very serious manner with Kovid Rosh and with consideration and with very, very careful deliberation. So that's what I wanted to begin to discuss this evening. I think it's important that these issues be spoken about publicly, because they, unfortunately, Rachmana Litzlan, come up all the time make no mistake, they come up not only in the secular world, they come up in our world, in our community. Unfortunately, it happens with community leaders. It happens with people who are, you know, who we never would have imagined would be involved in such things. But yet, unfortunately, this happens, and we need to make it very clear what our position is. So we begin with a comment of the Netziv. The Netziv, Reb Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, was one of the great Gedolim, one of the leaders of pre-war European Jewry, and he makes an extremely decisive and instructive comment. He leaves no margin for making a mistake, no margin for error at all in what he's telling us to do. The Torah says in Parshas, in Sefer Vayikra, Perek Yutes, Lo Selech Rachel Be'amecha, which means there's an Isser of Rechilas, which means to slander another individual. So Lo Selech Rachel Be'amecha means you are not allowed to slander another person. And the end of the pasuk is Lo Samod Al Dam Reyecha. You cannot stand by while somebody's life is being destroyed. Explains the Netziv. The Torah is written in a very particular format. There's a reason why every word is situated where it is. There's a reason why psukim are formulated in the way that they are. So why is it that these two seemingly incompatible commandments are put next to each other? What do they have any connection at all? Explains in a tziv, I'm going to read his words. Why is it that the Torah puts these two mitzvos, one next to the other? Sha'afa gavsha azhara lo selech rachel. Even though the Torah says that you have to be careful not to defame, not to smear another person, not to slander or libel them, mikal makom, the Torah also says in the same breath, lo samar adam reyecha. And those two need to be put next to each other because sometimes we have that struggle. And we, on the one hand, say, oh, it's lashon hara and it's rechilus and we're not allowed to do this. On the other hand, we need to remember that if you don't do what needs to be done, it is a problem of lo samar adam reyecha. Hainu, what it means is, im yodea she'ish echad rotza leira l'chayev shal adam acher. If you know with certainty that another person is trying to devastate and destroy another person's life, hareza mechuyev lehodio, you have an obligation to communicate that information. You must caution and notify the authorities, other individuals, whoever it may be. You have to inform them of the danger that is lurking that they are unaware of. And the Netziv says, this is why these two mitzvos are put one next to the other, because sometimes there's a major hesitation due to concerns of lo selech rachel be'amecha. Writes the Netziv, don't be discouraged. If you see that there's outrageous behavior that is going on, you don't have a right to remain silent. You don't have a right to be inhibited and be afraid. You need to speak up, because if you don't, lo samar adam reyecha is on the other end of the spectrum. Even more instructive than that is the comment of one of the Gedolei Chachmei Ashkenaz. We're all familiar with the Ramah. The Ramah is the guidebook, it's the rule book for all of Ashkenazic Jewry. And the Ramah took many of his Piske Halacha from the Trumas Hadeshen. Trumas Hadeshen came before the Ramah. So in the 1300s, the Ramah was in the 1500s. In the end of the 1300s, the Trumas Hadeshen passed away in 1460. So Rabbi Yisrael Isserlin was one of the great Gedolim of Chachmei Ashkenaz. And he makes a comment in one of his svarim, which is so significant to this point, and he says, "Ra'isi lahaz kirpo." I'm reading from his words. "Advar asher kol sifrei hamusar." You look in many of the musar svarim that teach us how to behave and how to interact with other people. They tell us, they warn us, they admonish us al avon lashon hara, about the severity of somebody who slanders other people and who spreads ill fate, ill will about other individuals. Writes the Trumas Hadeshen, Rabbi Yisrael Isserlin, Anochi marish ha'olam lehepuch. I go out of my way to warn the world about the opposite consequence. Avon gadol mizeh, which I believe is worse than the isur of lashon hara. So you read the Sefer Chafetz Chaim and you learn about how many isurim are involved every time you open your mouth and say something negative about another person. Writes the Trumas Hadeshen, I have something that's worse than that. And what is that? Gam hu matzu yoser. And he says, in my opinion, this is a bigger problem that is more prevalent than problem number one, v'hu, and that is minias atzmo miladaber. What I think is a bigger problem is that people feel inhibited, people are afraid, and they hold themselves back from talking when they need to. B'makom hanitzrach lahatzil ha'oshek miyad oshek. Davar Mashal says, for example, if I see somebody who is sneaking up on his friend, and the example that he gives is somebody is breaking into another person's house. So it's a very, it's a much more toned down example than what we're describing. Certainly it would be the case in what we're talking about. But he says, if I watch something and I see that there's a danger to my friend and he's completely unaware of it, after all, he's sleeping. He's not going to wake up. They're breaking into this basement. He's not going to hear it. He doesn't have an alarm. Is it possible? Does it make sense that you're going to hold that information back and not share it with your friend? So that tomorrow night the person's going to come back again and steal money from him? Mishum iser lashon hara, because you're worried about slandering this individual? So you're going to hold it back? Halo avonu gadol min haso. You're going to hold on to that terrible avera of letting your friend's life being destroyed because you're afraid to say something due to a concern of lashon hara? Says the Truma Sadashan, that is insane. You cannot accept such a position. V'chein, and here he adds, v'inyanei shidduch. The same thing is if you are consulted about an issue that is regarding shidduchim. So somebody calls and says, I'm looking into this girl, I'm looking into this boy, and you know very, very important information. We're not talking about a confidentiality breach. If somebody came to you and shared something confidentially, you have to be very careful to uphold that sense of confidentiality and that truth. If, you know, you can't call every doctor in the neighborhood and say, does the person have this and this illness? That would be insane if a doctor would share personal and private information. But if I happen to be the next door neighbor and I know that it's an abusive home, or I knew that there's something very, very serious going on at that house, and somebody calls me, you have to be very careful, says the Trumas Hadeshim. V'hu sheyodea shu ishra ubali'al. If I know that this person is dangerous, if I know that the person in question is unstable, and I know that they are abusive, v'ra lehischate nimo, and it's a terrible thing to make a shidduch with this person. We know what's going to happen. We know how that's going to end. Says the Shumat HaDeshen, we would not have a right to keep quiet. Haklal bazeh. So he suggests a very loose way to make the rule for when we're supposed to share information and when not. So the rule that he gives, again, it's a very loose definition, but it gives us the point, is Hadavar Masur Lalev, you have to ask yourself a very personal question, introspective. Im kavanaso l'ra'as ha'acher, if my intention in sharing this is simply to destroy the other person, then he says, that is Lashon Hara. But on the other hand, if my intent in sharing it is l'tovas ha'sheni, if the reason why I'm sharing it is not because I want to get back at this family, it's not because I have some hatred toward them and I want to destroy them, but rather because I want to save the second person who is about to be destroyed, in such a case, he says, mitzvah rabbah, I have an obligation to do so. So this is just a way to frame the conversation, that the Achronim tell us very clearly and very explicitly that at the same time that we have an Isser of Lashon Hara and Rechilas, at the same end of the spectrum, we have the prohibition of Lo Samad al Damriyacha, which is no less important than the first part of the pasuk, and there's a reason why they are placed one next to the other. Now you'll ask, what right do I have to humiliate, to embarrass, or to shame another person by giving over this kind of allegation? So we turn to a pasuk by the prohibition of Sota. The Torah in Sefer Bamidbar describes what happens when a woman is purported to have an extramarital affair, and again, it's just an allegation. It's an allegation that her husband has, that she has been unfaithful to him. Now the Gemara tells us that you cannot go into the whole detail of Sota without a really good reason for suspicion. So a husband wakes up one day, he says, you know, I think that you've been having an affair with someone. It has to come from somewhere. It has to be that he warns her. It has to be that he sees her going into a private place with another man. There has to be a reason for it. It can't just be out of nowhere. But you have a woman who is explicitly warned, and yet we're not 100% sure what happened. There's no video camera. And now the husband wants to take it forward because he really believes that he has a claim against his wife. So the Torah describes he has to bring his wife to the Beis HaMikdash, he has to be there as well, and everybody's watching, and the Torah there says, Upara es Rosh HaIsha, we expose this woman, we shame her, we embarrass her in the Beis HaMikdash. Everybody's watching, we don't tell them to move away, and she is very humiliated. And the Yerushalmi actually asked that question, how are we allowed to do that? V'chi mevazin al hasafik? What are we describing here? We're talking about a husband who's not sure whether or not his wife may have done this. It's an allegation. It's an allegation that comes from a place where he has good reason to be suspicious, but in the end of the day, it's just an allegation. And because of an allegation, you're going to allow this man to humiliate his wife in front of everybody? How can that be? How are we allowed to do that? Which is exactly the question that people ask in our generation. How can I go ahead and put forth a claim when it's going to humiliate someone if, after all, it's only an allegation? It's just a suffix. And the answer that the Yerushalmi gives is, that we know that the Torah tells us by Parshas Noach, that when there is nus, when there is this kind of behavior going around, when there is arayos that is rampant in our community, it brings about a great vulnerability to the community. It brings about devastation for all of us. The Lashon of the Gemara is Andra Malusia Bala Olam. A major catastrophe is going to happen physically to the world as a result of God's anger for what is happening in that particular situation. And therefore, the Gemara in the Yerushalmi says that because this action may jeopardize the lives of many others in our community, if it is true, we have a right to err on the side of caution for the safety of our community and go ahead and humiliate this person in question. That is an amazing source. You bring it down to our case and you see that we certainly would have a right for the safety of our community if somebody has a credible reason to believe that this is something that happened, even though it may ultimately lead to humiliation or to shame or to some kind of embarrassment of the person that is being suspected of doing such. For the safety of the rest of the community, this is what they need to do. It's no less than the story that we're told in the Yerushalmi about a sota who we are mevaze afilu al hasafik, just on a suspicion or just on an allegation. Now, beyond the shame and embarrassment, isn't there also sometimes a physical or a tangible kind of loss when an allegation is filed? So how can you do that? Sometimes the person may lose their job. Sometimes they're going to have to suffer financial loss because they're going to have to hire a lawyer or whatever it may be. They're going to have to go through all the different steps that are necessary. So this is also a question. The Gemara Maseches Kiddushin actually discusses this. And the Gemara Maseches Kiddushin writes, in the times of Chazal, Malkin, they used to give Malkus. So there are very clear regulations in the Gemara, who deserves Malkus and who doesn't. Who's supposed to get lashes? What, every time somebody does something wrong, you hit them? No, obviously not. There's a process of how we do it. And yet, the Gemara in Maseches Kiddushin writes, Malkin alo tov hashmua. If there's an allegation going around the neighborhood, and there's enough reason to believe that it's true, so it says that the leaders of the community, who are the Beis Din, are allowed to go and give the person lashes. What do you mean? But I wasn't tried, and nobody gave me any warning, and nobody anything, and it's not following the rules and regulations that the Gemara lays out for the person who really deserves Malkus, and yet the Gemara says, Alo tov hashmua, because there is a terrible story going around, and we actually have good reason to believe it. The Gemara says that we are allowed to give Malkus for that, which is amazing. That's an amazing statement. And that is what the Gemara tells us, so much so that the Rambam takes it even further in Hilchos Sanhedrin, and he says, V'chein yesh lebeizdin v'chol makom v'chol zman. If you have a credible beizdin, we're not talking about an ad hoc beizdin that nobody recognizes, that nobody respects, that nobody appointed. We're talking about a respectable authority in the community, who used to be the leadership of the community. Now again, obviously in America, we follow Dina de Malchusa Dina. We can't take the law into our own hands and start beating people up. Chalila, we don't do those things. But the Rambam says, in theory, if we had our own system and we were running the judicial system of the town, in such a case, he says, in every generation, the Beis Din has a right, lahalkos adam, to give malchus, to give lashes to a person, sheshmu aso ra'a, that we hear terrible things about, v'sheha'am miraninim alav shehu over al ha'arayos. Exactly this case. If we have a person in town who we hear is going around and doing terrible things, and it hasn't yet been proven, but the Beis Din, who is the local authority, has a reason to believe that this is true, the Rambam, based on that Gemara and Kiddushin, says you're allowed to give that man a punishment, which is a very severe response. All of that being said, we now turn to the words of the Chafetz Chaim. The Chafetz Chaim writes, Imra Adam Echad, Sha'asa Avla Lachadera. What if I see that there's an individual who is destroying, who is wrecking another person's life? For example, the example that he gives is somebody stealing from another person, and the other person is totally oblivious. So that's the example he gives, 1,000 times more so for the situation that we're describing here. So he says, V'nodelo bebir, and the Chafetz Chaim writes, and I know conclusively, I know with certainty, not that I'm assuming, I know with certainty, I saw it myself, I watched what happened, I see that this person is losing out because of somebody else is taking advantage. In such a case, says the Chafetz Chaim, Afilu ra davar ze biyachidi. Normally, we know that you need two witnesses. Right? Couple wants to get married. You can't have one person being the witness. You need two witnesses. And that's the case whenever we administer a din Torah. We always have to have two witnesses present who present the case. Writes the Chafetz Chaim, even if I'm there alone and I'm the only other person who saw this and there's nobody else to back up my claim, Chafetz Chaim says, that should not stop me from going ahead and sharing the information with somebody who can do something about what it is that I experienced, what it is that I saw. Kedei lazer la'asher asham lo, in order that I should be able to help the person who was taken advantage of. That is what the Chafetz Chaim says. However, he does warn us that there are conditions and guidelines when doing so. And we need to keep this in mind also. You can't just pull the trigger for no good reason just because you think that maybe something happened. Again, we should not be discouraging people who have a real claim, but you have to make sure that you have something real before pulling the trigger and moving ahead. And the Chafetz Chaim outlines 7 different conditions that need to be met in order for a person to move forward. All of them are applicable in the situation we're talking about, but you have to think about it very carefully beforehand. 1, he says you have to have first-hand knowledge. It can't be that you heard from someone who heard from somebody else, and maybe this and that. No, it has to be first-hand knowledge. Either I experienced it, or he says, "Shenizbar lo achar kach shehadavar emes." Either I saw it myself, I had first-hand knowledge, or 2, says the Chafetz Chaim, that I spoke to somebody who I absolutely trust, and it became clear to me that this is true, and I corroborated the story, and it's substantiated by a well-established individual, then I have a right to go to 2 and share that information with somebody who can help. But without that first step, you can't do anything. That's 1. 2, he says, Yizahar miyod, you have to be careful that you don't draw your own conclusions. You have to see something that is factual. You can't say, oh, my assumption is if I saw A and then I saw B, it must be, putting the dots together, must be that this happened. No. It has to be something that is factual, something that is truth, and not a conclusion that you drew based on a number of circumstances that you think may have led to what happened. You have to know with certainty that this is what's really going on. 3, he says, I first have to try a less destructive way to handle it. Now, he's not talking about a potential abuser, because there are very few less destructive ways to do that. He's talking about somebody who stole money. Says the Chafetz Chaim, if somebody stole money, instead of running to the police right away, first go talk to the person and say, what's happening? I saw what you did. I'm going to expose you. You may have to then take the next step and go to the police. You may have to then take it to the authorities. But he says the first step you should take is trying to put the person back in their place without destroying their life. Again, when we're talking about an abusive situation, that's not relevant at all. But that's the third qualification that he makes. 4, he says, you're not allowed to exaggerate or inflate the story. You have to say the facts as they happen. And unfortunately, this also sometimes is the case, that as you tell the story over to one person, to another person, to the authorities, to this, to that, so sometimes it gets lost in translation, and not everything is said over as accurately as it should be. And this is 4. 5, he says, Sheyechavein litoelas. My intent in sharing this information has to be to bring about justice to the victim. V'lo lehenos me'apagam shehunosim mechavero. It cannot come from a place of retaliation, of revenge. That's not what this is about. This is saving the victim, saving future victims, saving other people from getting taken advantage of. That has to be what I have in mind when I do such a thing. And 7, he says that I have to allow this person to have a fair and legitimate chance to deal with it. I have to allow this person the opportunity to stand up and say their side of the story. Now again, sometimes the person won't be willing to go along with it. Okay, so we have to do what we have to do. If you call a predator in and you want to cross-examine them and they're not willing to talk, okay, so we're going to have to move ahead without them. But we have to give the person an opportunity in a legitimate forum, in a legitimate setting, to defend themselves. Those are the 7 qualifications. Now, even if you cannot prosecute, but you feel that by sharing the details, people will protect themselves, writes the Chafetz Chaim. So again, let's say I don't have enough, you know, I know that the local government won't take me seriously. I don't know, whatever it is. But I know that people in my neighborhood respect me, and I know that I can save people in my neighborhood from this kind of predator, from this kind of abusive personality. In such a case, writes the Chafetz Chaim, Bivadei nachal nasas adavar kein. Even if I cannot prosecute them, but I believe that by my sharing this information with a small group of people, that will help them because they're the most in danger. In such a case, he says, that is also a toelis, and that is something to think about as well. Then he adds another critical component, and that is, v'day, you should know, de'ein chiluk bechal elu ha-pratim. You have to follow these 7 qualifications and guidelines, and it does not matter, he says, whether you are the person who was personally impacted or whether you are someone else who was not impacted, but you watched what happened. And he writes, it doesn't matter if you're a relative of the victim. Whoever you may be, all of these qualifications need to be met. And it doesn't matter whether the person asked you to do this or did not ask you to do it. You have an obligation to do the right thing. So even if the victim says, I don't care, you know, it doesn't really matter, they just stole a few dollars from me, let them get away with it. Well, if you're concerned that maybe they're going to continue this kind of destructive behavior and steal and cheat other people, then, the Chafetz Chaim writes, whether the victim wants you to say anything or not, you need to stand up and do the right thing. So let's address one of the major questions that people wonder, and that is, number one, what do we do about the fact that these witnesses are non-halachic witnesses? And number two, what do we do about the fact that there's an issue of mesira? So those are two very, very important questions that we need to think about. So number one, about the witnesses issue. There is a Gemara, Maseches Bava Metzia, Daf Pei Gimel Amud Beis, a fascinating Gemara, where the Gemara tells a story about none other than Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon, one of the most famous names that we mention in the Gemara, who is hired, and he has a profession. What is his profession? He's not a Tana, he's not an Amora, that was a side job. But what he did as a full-time job was he was a police officer. Not for the Jewish police force, not for the CSS. He was a police officer for the Nassau County Police Department. And what was his job? His job was, the Gemara says, that if he found that somebody was doing something wrong, he would hand them over to the authorities, and the authorities would actually kill them. Not they would incarcerate them, they would kill them. So he knew every time he arrested someone that the outcome, if the person was guilty, was they would have this extreme punishment of being killed. Now, it's not a job for a nice Jewish boy, but that's what he did. So the Gemara says that Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha is one of his friends, and he says, I don't understand. You are a chometz ben yayin. You are like vinegar that came from wine. Wine is so delicious and people enjoy it and they appreciate it, and you're the vinegar. You're the spoiled, rotten wine, the lousy offspring that came from your father. Your father was such a holy tzaddik, and his son goes out and takes a job as a police officer, making Jews lose their lives. It's a crazy profession for you. This doesn't really make sense. And he turns back to him and he says, no, I'm actually doing the right thing. Why? Because we know that if you have a garden, you have to take out all of the rotten leaves, all of the rotten tomatoes, in order for everything else to grow nicely. So he says, we have a community. We want it to be safe. We want it to be a good community. I have to get rid of all the thorns in order that the rest of our community should function well. So I'm actually doing a service to the Jews. I'm not doing a disservice. It just depends how you look at it. That was his response. To which Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha responds to him, Yavo bal hakerem v'yechala eskutzav. Let God figure out how to get rid of the thorns. This is not a job for a nice Jewish boy. This is God's job. He'll figure out how to make sure the community stays safe. Have we ever heard that before? Right? Let's let God take care of the problem. You don't go ahead and try to solve the issue. That's what the Gemara says. Now, the Gemara ends off the story without telling us who's right. The Gemara just says they had this exchange. Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon was prosecuting all these people and ultimately they were killed. And his friends were appalled. They couldn't believe it. So how do we paskin? So, number one, the Ritva writes that Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon felt that since he was hired by the Nassau County Police Department, since he was hired by the local government, the local authority, which is an honest government and runs a fair judicial system, in such a situation, he said that he was allowed to prosecute people even though there were no witnesses, even though there was not the regular halachic criterion that we normally need in a Beis Din, but he was hired by the local government, and the local government is trustworthy and honest, and if this is the punishment for someone who does something like this, then so be it. And that was his position. And the question is, how do we paskin? Very important question. The Rashban at Shuva raises this issue. And he says that the answer is that if you have somebody who is Mimuna al Hatzibur, Lasos Dinu Mishpat, if you have somebody who is put as a police officer, somebody who is part of the enforcement team, but they are not self-appointed. They are people who were appointed by the community, meaning we pay taxes, right? So we obviously, if we didn't trust Nassau County, we wouldn't pay taxes to them. We wouldn't live here, correct? So by the virtue of the fact that we elect our officials and that we pay taxes and that we go along with what goes on in our municipality, that means we trust them. If we didn't, we would move out and go somewhere else. We have the option to do that. But from the fact that we live here, it means that this is something we believe in. It's a system that we think is just. And if that's the case, the Rashba addresses this point directly, and he says, since we need to have an operating and functioning system of the society that we live in, and this is the way that it functions, that we have a police department, and this is what they do, and they prosecute people, even shelo al pi mishpatei haTorah, they don't follow the protocols that the Gemara describes, they don't follow the protocols that the Shulchan Aruch and Choshen Mishpat writes, but since we have a relationship with the government, and this is a government that we trust, and this is how the judicial system works, we would be allowed to go along with it, even if it means that someone's going to lose their life. And says the Rashba, how do I know this is true? Because Rabbi Elazar Reb Shimon was right. And he was a nice Jewish boy doing the right thing. And he was cleaning the community out from all of their potential problems and all the threats that were coming along their way. The same sentiment is shared by the Tashbetz, another one of the Gedolei HaRishonim, who writes in a tshuva. There was a man whose name was, let's say his name was Reuven. He has a friend whose name is Shimon. By the way, Reuven, the Tashbetz writes, was blind. And because he was blind, he was always nervous that people were going to take advantage of him. So he was afraid. He had stones. Somebody once gave him a few rubies, a few beautiful sapphires, and he was nervous that someone was going to steal it. So how does he make sure? So he sewed them into his clothing. Who's going to steal his shirt? Nobody's going to take his shirt off with him. So he sewed it into his clothing. This way he knew it was safe. One fine day, he has a friend, Shimon, who's always in and out of his house. One fine day, after Reuven goes to sleep, suddenly the stones are no longer anywhere to be found in the clothing of Reuven. Now, how does anybody know that Reuven sewed his stones into his clothing? I mean, how would anybody know that unless you're somebody who's always in his house and somebody who's very familiar with what's going on there? So all eyes were pointed to Shimon, and they said, hey, Shimon, this looks a little fishy. You've been in and out of his house. You know what time he goes to sleep at night. You help him get to bed. You help him into the shower. You help him get dressed and undressed. Obviously, you're the one who is responsible for this terrible atrocity. And this was a case that was brought to the Tashbetz. And they asked the Tashbetz, but how can we prosecute? Nobody knows. But we all have a very clear assumption that it's him because nobody else has been around. It's obvious that it's him. And the Tashbetz writes, in such a situation, even though we know that there are no Edim, and we know that there's nobody who could corroborate the story, but it's very clear to all of us that Shimon is not innocent. It's clear that he's guilty. In such a case, he says, Letovas Hamadina, for the betterment of our society and our community, we are allowed to prosecute based on our understanding. That's the best we can do. Aye, but it doesn't follow the rules of Edim and Hasra, and it doesn't follow the rules of two kosher Edim, and it has to be over bar mitzvah in this age, and this kind of person. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter, because this is the only way to have a functioning society. This is quoted the halacha in the Beis Yosef. The Beis Yosef quotes the Rashba, and he accepts their opinion that it would not be considered a problem to go ahead and prosecute, even though it doesn't follow the halachic protocols that are normally expected to be followed when we deal with the Beis Din system itself. Can I take an extra 5 minutes to finish up this part? Okay, we'll finish the next part next week. But now we get to the next issue, and that is, what about Mesira? And you hear this question all the time. People throw around the word Mesira. Oh, it's Mesira, it's Mesira, what do we do? And the answer is as follows. To understand that, number one, you have to look in Shulchan Aruch, where he talks about the Isra of Mesira. And there he says very clearly that we are not allowed to give over an individual who is a member of our community, Lidei Ovdei Kochavim. The Isra of Mesira is very clear. You're not allowed to hand someone over. Hang on a minute. Afilu Hayarasha Ubal Averos, even if this person is horrible. Why? Because we have no trust in the local government. That's what the Shulchan Aruch says. Just put yourself back in the 1500s and in the back of the times of the Gemara. You have pogroms going on. You have the Crusades. You have all this hatred toward the Jewish community. What do you think they're going to do if you bring somebody in who got in a fight in the bar one night and beat somebody else up? You think they're going to give him a fair trial? Of course they won't. They're going to destroy him. They're going to kill him. Here's an opportunity to kill a Jew. So that's why there's an Isser Mesira. And so much so, the Shulchan Aruch then continues and says, if you know that there's a member of the community who is handing other members over to the local government, he is considered like a rotzeach, and you're allowed to kill him. That's how far it goes. So the Isser of Mesira is real. It's not made up. It's real. Nowadays, we have a very different set of circumstances. Why is that? Because nowadays, we live in a democracy. We live with a fair judicial system where people have a right, for the most part. Again, obviously, there are always holes in the system. But for the most part, we believe that we're living in a fair country, and we're living where people have a fair opportunity to defend themselves and have the opportunity to have a fair chance at clearing their name and clearing the story and doing what needs to be done. And they do not discriminate against Jews, usually, right? Sometimes you have these aberrations, but usually we do not assume that there's going to be a discrimination against this group or that group or this color or that color. The assumption is that there's going to be a fair trial based on the judicial system that we have set up here in the United States. And therefore, the whole issue of Mesira is not really as applicable as it once was. Now you'll ask, How dare you say such a thing? Who are you to argue with the Shulchan Aruch? It's not me saying this. The Aruch HaShulchan actually discusses this. The Aruch HaShulchan writes, the reason why I think it's important to read all this from the sources is because sometimes you talk to people and they say, where'd you get that from? How do you know? The answer is, it's all there. You just have to know where to look. The Aruch HaShulchan writes it very clearly in Chosha Mishpat, where he says, Yadua Lakol, that in the days of Medinas Rechokos, Lahayol Ish Bitachon Begufo Umamamono Mepnei Hashodidim HaAnasim, they lived in uncivilized countries. And the Aruch HaShulchan says, in the days of the Gemara, they were afraid that the local municipality was going to come and steal their house and steal their money. So he says, if you're living in such an outrageous kind of society with such a government on top of you, of course there's an Isser of Mesira. However, he says, nowadays, Kayadua, Game Hayom Bimedinas Africa, there are some African countries, says the Aruch HaShulchan, where it's still that way. And it's totally uncivilized, and you can have no trust in the government at all or in the police force. And we know in South Africa there are many stories about the bribery going on and all this craziness. And therefore, he says, that is exactly what the Isser Mesira is. However, he says, when we're dealing with our community who lives here in Europe, and at the time, he says, we do have a fair judgment, and we do have a fair judicial system that is set up. And we do believe that everyone's going to have the opportunity to present themselves in court and to defend themselves as best as they can and to try to be like everybody else. And a Jew is not going to be discriminated against. In such a case, he says, the whole discussion that the Shulchan Aruch and the Gemara have about Mesira is irrelevant because it's not at all the set of circumstances that we have today. Beyond that, even if you want to say that there still is an issue of Mesira and you still have to worry because you don't trust the government and you do think they're going to discriminate, you have all kinds of conspiracy theorists who believe in this. Even if you do believe that that is true, there's an additional point to add here, and that is, the Rambam says, even when, and this is quoted in Shulchan Aruch, even when you know that somebody is going to be judged unfairly because of Mesira, if you hand them over to the local authorities, they're going to be punished far more severely than they deserve, and they're not going to be given a fair chance. Says the Rambam, if we're dealing with somebody who is a public menace, if we're dealing with somebody who is a danger to the Rabbim, who is a danger to the community, then the Rambam says all bets are off. The Mesira issue is off the table. That's what the Rambam writes. And the Shulchan Aruch quotes it, that somebody who is mitzar asat tzibur, somebody who is a public danger, somebody who is a hazard and a threat to the community in a certain sense, mutter lemosr legoy, even under the old conditions of the uncivilized countries and the unjust judicial system, even in such a case, the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch say, the issue of Mesira would not apply because the stakes are too high. Think about a potential abuser. And as we know, the research has showed time and again, so clearly, that these individuals are repeat offenders. It doesn't happen once. It's just not the case. It does not happen in a vacuum. It will happen over and over again. And there's no greater example of this Rambam than a person who's involved in this kind of activity. That is somebody who is Meitzer L'Rabim, somebody who is a danger to the public health, a danger, he's a hazard to society, and we need to make sure that we do everything we can to get this person off the streets. The Rambam says, even if you live in one of those countries where the person is not going to run a fair trial, they have to be prosecuted, they have to be handed over because the stakes are just too high. So that is with regard to that. Now, many people question the Rambam, where did he get that idea that if somebody is a Meitzer L'Rabim, we should go ahead and be most of them? It's a good question, but it's what the Rambam says, and it's the way the Shulchan Aruch paskens. I see that we're already over time, so we'll continue in Mirtz Hashem next week if people are interested in this topic. I think it's important. But for now, I think we've gotten a few of the issues out of the way, and we can continue with some of the other very pertinent and very relevant issues next week.